to the World Soccer Talk Pod. Yes, we are back after yet another interminable international break. Although we did do a preview show, and in that preview show, these three Muppets I have on the air with me gave some predictions, and we will revisit those predictions because they do make for some hilarious reading. Don't forget, you can also subscribe to us via Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes, and get yourself on Twitter at World Soccer Talk, hashtag WSTPod. It's time now to introduce my starting 11 and up front. Well, who else could you have but the stat man, David Mossy? How can the folks get in touch with you, David?
At Statman Mossy, M-O-S-S-E. Happy to be here, Nick. My day began early today with a little bit of women's soccer from Wembley.
Rub it in, all right? Just because we lost to the bloody Krauts again.
Yeah, Sausage with two goals. That's actually the name of the Germany striker, Sausage.
Oh, behave.
Just want to congratulate before we move on. Cruzeiro won their second straight Brazilian league title today.
Nice. Did anybody pay attention other than you to the fact that Cruzeiro won their second league title?
No, I don't think anybody outside of Brazil follows that league, but I do. So there you have it.
Nate Abureia. I mean, if anyone's lower than a snake's belly right now, it must be you.
I am actually sitting in Watsonville, California for this edition of the pod in my original backyard that I grew up where I used to imagine that I was Michael Owen or Robbie Fowler. And back in those days, Liverpool were pretty much a middle of the road side. And so it's really, really coming full circle as I'm sitting here right now with my 14th place Reds or 12th, whatever they're in.
Don't forget, though, you can also mention the glorious point that they're only, what?
The 5 points off a Champions League spot.
5 points, yes. Excellent. How can they get in touch with you?
Darth Nader 99. Cheer me up. We need you around these times.
Okay, Fat Boy, you're kind of depressed as well as that brief dream of Champions League football has been cruelly snatched from you.
No, it's early days. We're fine. So you can get hold of me at BertieBoy11. And I got up really early this morning not to watch women's football, but to watch the great Lewis Hamilton win the Formula One Championship. Good on you, Lewis.
Yes, that was very exciting. Finally, something that England's fairly respectable at, although given the fact that Lewis Hamilton has the best car in the world, I guess it's not such a brilliant achievement.
You drive on the right side of the road. Come on.
And don't they go round, they go clockwise in Grand Prix, right, Bertie?
Well, it depends where the track is.
Oh, God. Yes, next thing you're going to say, Australia, they go the other way, right?
How do you know?
How do I know? Okay, let's get straight into this show. It's my responsibility as the manager, ultimately. I put the team out there, the best team to win us the game. We made a good start. You could see our passing was a wee bit tentative. And then we make mistakes. Mistakes you wouldn't expect to see from a team that's supposed to be challenging. We failed to manage the game. Now, I've been saying he's a charlatan for about a year and a half. I keep on getting so much abuse from Liverpool fans saying, how dare you? How dare you question St. Brendan Rodgers? But ultimately, football is a game that will always be judged on results, not the way you play. And currently, right now, Liverpool have made their worst start, and Stat will back me up, to a Premiership campaign since the Premiership was invented in 1992. At what point, being that the Liverpool owners are of the American variety, which means they have the patience of a wasp on speed, do they pull the plug on Brendan Rodgers? And the thing that makes me laugh is, after giving him a whopping great extension, how are they going to worm their way out of not paying him out a whole heap of money? Nate Abureia, this Liverpool team right now is a joke, and it was so good to see them go to Selhurst Park and see the old Palace do the number on them again. And I will say, though, in your defense, every one of us did predict a Liverpool victory.
Well, Brendan Rodgers, first to answer the first of a plethora of questions there from you, Nick. Brendan Rodgers will get till the end of this year because Liverpool this season, in not to make excuses for them, but they're a reflection of the league itself. I love that stat about the worst start in Premier League history since it was invented back in 92. Take Manchester United, who have their worst start in 25 years going right now, and they're in fourth place. And Liverpool, I'm not even going to break down this 3-1 loss and the tactics of the game and the happenings of the game itself, because the table is doing that for me. Liverpool Football Club are 2 points better than Crystal Palace. And that says it all, and that says a real statement about the league itself. Arsenal are 5 points better than Crystal Palace. I mean, it blows my mind. There's a 9-point gap between a Champions League spot and the drop zone. And we've spoken so much about parity in this league over the last few weeks, and it's either a testament to there's either a lot of good sides when there's parity in a table, or there's a lot of crap, a lot of mediocrity, and it's the latter in this case. And Liverpool are right there in the middle of it, and quite frankly, I have no problem saying this as a Liverpool supporter. They are 2 points better than Crystal Palace as a team right now. You take Daniel Sturridge and Luis Suarez out of that team, and this is what was bound to happen. Maybe not to this level, but I didn't see Liverpool pulling away. Me and Statman have talked about this so much, is that these predictions for what Liverpool was going to do this year, they were outrageous. They were going to repeat. They were going to build on last year. No, last year was their chance, and they blew it. And I texted you this morning, Nick, and said, I don't think they're ever going to recover. It's going to be 5 years before they're going to recover from Slipgate and Christan F. All back in early 2014. So, I mean, that's all I got to say about this. But I'll really grind your gears right here and say that they're 5 points off a Champions League spot, and with how crap this league is showing itself to be, fourth place is not that far off.
Just put a sock in it. Richie Garcia, at Richie Garcia. This is for Statman. Rodgers can't blame this one on Balotelli, or can he?
No, obviously not. He ended up not playing because of that injury, picked up on international duty, as Bertie said, and I corrected him wrongly, as it turns out.
On, Bertie. Finally got one right.
No, but I think the issue for Rodgers now is, you know, I've heard talk about how Liverpool need to go out and buy a new striker in January, and they're not going to give him any more money to spend. I mean, they gave him enough this summer, and now he has to be able to get it sorted with these players, and I don't see him doing that. So I agree with Nate. I think we're headed for Rodgers being gone this summer, which is an amazing fall from grace for him.
Fatty, let's go to you and talk about Crystal Palace, because I believe in week 4 or 5 I was talking about the atmosphere at Selhurst Park. You've been to many of the grounds around London. How would you rate the atmosphere? Because, I mean, once again, this place was absolutely rocking. It's a dump of a stadium. It's so hard to get to. And yet the atmosphere generated at Selhurst Park, I honestly think it's the best in the Premier League.
Yeah, it's one of the smallest grounds in the Premier League, but it's one of those really intimate pitches, which is really close to the fans. And it's the same for some of the other clubs in London. But the unique thing about Crystal Palace, I think, is that they have such low expectations, but they go there and they go there to have fun. And when they beat Liverpool last year, I mean, they were just taking the piss out of Liverpool.
Tied Liverpool, Bertie, tied Liverpool.
What?
They tied them last year.
Yeah, so when they tied them last year. But, I mean, you know, I mean, this is a club that has a rich history of, you know, playing in the Premier League, playing in the First Division, the old First Division. And so they love these types of games. And, you know, there's that small pocket of, I guess you might call them ultras, which they don't call them in England, where you've got a small pocket of fans, and they're constantly bobbing up and down and up and down, and it gets everybody else going around them as well. I mean, it's probably not that an intimidating ground to play at, but they certainly make a hell of a whole lot of noise for, I mean, I forget how many people are there, what, maybe 20,000 or something like that. It's a small ground.
24,862 to be precise. And I was going to say something very rude about your bobbing up and down, and it would have something to do with you and your wife, but we're going to keep it clean.
Again,
this is
again.
A nice, nice family show.
Steady.
For me, myself, Liverpool are a team that is woefully short of confidence, and you want to look at leaders on the pitch. And, you know, the first name that comes to mind is Steven Gerrard, who, by his standards, is having a woeful season. Obviously, there's something going on. There's a World Cup hangover, perhaps. The players that Rodgers has brought to replace Suarez or to bolster the team with the Suarez money, Lovren is doing absolutely nothing. Ricky Lambert scores his first goal today, but really, is he any kind of replacement? Sterling seems to be tired still. I mean, he was tired during the England qualifiers. I mean, why is he so tired, Stat? Is he going out a lot? Is he burning the midnight oil, or is the poor little youngster just feeling the fatigue of playing football for once a week?
No, I mean, it's been surprising because he was in electric form this summer at the Guinness Cup and even at the start of the season. And yeah, he did have that controversy. He asked out of a match against Estonia in Euro qualifying. And ever since then, I don't think it's fatigue. I think it's something more mental that's going on with him. But he's really gone off the boil. And, you know, with Sturridge not around, I mean, they really need Sterling week in, week out to be an impact player. And he's not doing it. So, yeah, I mean, this is just a total meltdown by this club. You know, they're in big trouble in the Champions League. They have to a trip to Bulgaria this midweek to face Ludogorets, which is tougher than it sounds.
I mean, you try pronouncing what's it again?
Ludogorets.
Yeah,
I've dubbed them, by the way, the Bulgarian Man City, because they're a team that had no history, and then they were bought by a rich owner in 2010, got promoted to the top flight for the first time, and they've won three straight league titles, and they're in the Champions League now, playing against the likes of Liverpool and Real Madrid. So that's kind of a fun story, and we'll see if they can inflict even more misery on Liverpool this midweek.
I think Ludogorets were founded, correct me if I'm wrong, Stat, in 2001 as a club, so which means they're, what, 2 years older than Chelsea?
go ahead.
No, I was just adding a little exclamation point to Nate's terrible joke.
Give me a rim shot. Give me a ba-dum-cha.
Are you just stunted now, Stat?
No, that's pretty much it. I mean, I agree with everything you guys have said. I mean, this is just a complete disaster of a season so far. I mean, all the good feeling going into the season is just evaporated, and I don't see Rodgers getting this turned around. So this is not going to end well for him.
Just oozing positivity over here, by the way.
Yes. Let's stay on Merseyside. Now, you have to identify the player. He is a great ambassador for our football club. He was outstanding throughout the game. I want to praise the referee. I really enjoyed his performance. So, name the player, name the referee.
The player is Osman.
Oh, that's not bad, Bertie.
All right, okay.
And the referee?
Oh, I can't remember.
Oh, dear. Mark Clattenburg, who has been under suspicion a number of times over the last few years for, I don't know, dodginess. But Everton getting 3 points at West Ham United. Now, in the prediction game, if I do recall, Nate, Stat and Bertie all said a draw. The one genius in the midst of vegetables was, oh me, who called the win. Everton getting the victory. And Everton coming into... Yeah, you know, I mean, they're playing nicely again after the little panic we had at the beginning of the season. And as Nate and I have spoken about often and off air, which means it's a conversation that really can't be had on air, Tim Howard finally putting down the microphone, really putting in some very, very positive performances. And Everton looking like a nice-looking team as Ross Barkley pulls the strings in midfield. Let's start with you, Robin Burt. West Ham United, though, a little bit of a disappointment after that flirtation with the top four and Champions League football. You were expecting a draw. Why didn't it happen?
I think there was a lot of injuries, coming into this game. There was about four or five players who I didn't think were going to be missing from this game. But Downing was missing, Valencia, Sarko, Song and Coyote. So you've got basically the spine of everything positive going forward. And it was just decimated before the game. So then you have Cole and Carroll playing up top, which is, you know, you've lost your dynamism right there. And so, I mean, there was no creativity apart from Amalfitano was probably the only player pulling the strings for West Ham. There was a few sort of balls into the middle from Cresswell and Jenkinson. But, I mean, Carroll, poor game. He's just out of sorts. I mean, he needs playing time as well. But
well, he did trouble them a little bit with his aerial dominance.
Well, no, but I don't think he really hurt them at all. I mean, you know, he's very physical and everything else, but Cole, he turns his back on the defenders. All he's doing is playing off his chest and then losing it. And there's no rhythm between the two of them. You need someone who's quick to play off one of the big guys. So, I mean, it was very easy for Everton, I thought, actually. I mean, granted, they scored a fairly lucky goal with Lukaku, you know, in the beginning, and I thought that was actually offside. And then, you know, Zarate came on for West Ham. Again, that was a lucky deflection. And then Leon Osman, it had to be Leon Osman who was going to bloody score that winner. I mean, you know, his 400th game for Everton. And I guess they deserved it. They shaded it on the end of the, you know, at the end of the day.
Shaded it. Abaroa, would you say that was a shaded performance? I mean, 2-0 seems like a fairly dominating, sorry, 2-1 seems like 2-1. A dominating performance of sorts.
Well, I just want to go back to the predictions. I actually called 2-2 on this match, so I was only a goal off. I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't matter in football, does it? You know, a draw or a win, it's one and the same.
I was 1 goal and 2 points off of the result itself. But no, I don't think it was shady. I think Everton deserved the match. But I do crack up when Bertie lists Stuart Downing as one of the injured players. And who would have thought that would have been said a couple of years ago, that would be a big thing of a squad is missing Stuart Downing. Look out. The spine is gone. Downing's out of the lineup. But I mean, this whole thing with Andy Carroll, I mean, it breaks my heart and sort of brings a smile to my face at the same time from a Liverpool standpoint, even just from a footballing fan standpoint. And I've said this for a number of weeks now, and it's one of those things where managers struggle with it when a player has such a high salary and they were brought in for such a high transfer amount of you have to play him. You have to get him back in the squad. From an actual competitive standpoint, and I'm curious to get your take on this, Bertie, Andy Carroll as a super sub for West Ham when they're down a goal or trying to win a match, you know, tied late at home, I see him actually offering far more coming on for 20 to 25 minutes at a time once it becomes Route 1 football, once it becomes, hey, we're going to nick one on a corner or something like that. And I don't see him offering much from the start for this team, but I actually, it's so funny because there's no gray area. I see him offering a huge amount actually off the bench for West Ham, who I know are going to play ample close games throughout this season.
Yeah, he's the perfect guy to come off the bench, but it's the same with Nolan as well. He adds that sort of physicality and that aggression that you need to close out games in the last 15, 20 minutes. But yeah, Carroll would be ideal for that situation, as long as Saka and Valencia are back and can stay fit. Or you can mix it up with the big guy and one of those quicker guys together. I mean, both scenarios work.
Now, Nick, you we spoke about Mr. Barkley there, who is in my beloved Draft 11 fantasy team, the Aristocrats for all of you Draft 11 fantasy football fans out there. Are we going to get to talk about City during this podcast? Because I know you have a little man crush, shall we say, on your fantasy boy, Sergio Aguero.
Well, we certainly do. My team, by the way, is named Footy Stud. And before we go on to reviewing more of the Premier League, let's talk about this brand new fantasy soccer game. Now, I know some of you have probably got really hyped up about the Fantasy Premier League every August. Yeah, we get so excited. We build these leagues and you make bets with your mates. But I tell you what, by this time of the season, you've probably forgotten all about the team and every player is injured and you just forget to change your lineup. And you're playing against millions of people. But I've found a great game for you. And it's a brand new fantasy football game. You named it, Nate, Draft 11. Go to draft11.com. It's a daily fantasy sports game. You can create a team and play in a game that lasts just one day or one weekend. There's none of this forward planning nonsense. You don't have to see who's in, who's out. You can just bomb the lot of the players and put a whole lot new in. And you can win. This is the best part about it. It's not, ooh, win a nice autobiography or win tickets to the game. No, you can win filthy amounts of cash. Cash prizes with draft11.com. And this is the crazy part. It's completely legal to play if you live in the US. That's right. And it's free to register. And we've got a special offer for World Soccer Talk podcast listeners. If you can compete in next weekend's Premier League matches, that's November 29 to December 1, and you play against me and the gaffer, that's right, Christopher Harris, the man who runs this fine, fine soccer site, as well as Kartik Karishnaya, well, the listeners who finish with the five top scores will get $25 each. That's right, $25. And by our reckoning before the show, we said that's at least a case of cheap Chardonnay, right, Bertie?
I don't think it's going to be that difficult to beat you, is it?
It's completely free, unlike your case of cheap Chardonnay. Just go to draft11.com between now and November 29th, register for free, and then this is the important part, okay? Enter the game labeled World Soccer Talk League, all right? I'm going to say it one more time. Go to draft11.com, sign up today, enter the game labeled World Soccer Talk League. You can play against me, the gaffer, Kara Schneier, and you can win money, which currently Manchester City are not going to do. However, they did get back to winning ways, taking care of the gaffer's beloved Swansea. We all said predictions, yes. We're all geniuses on this one. We all said that City would win. Stat got the scoreline completely correct. Well done, Stat. You did say 2-1. I said 3-0. Nate kind of warbled about something, and Bertie just said City win. Yaya Toure, yes, you mentioned him earlier, Nate. I believe that he got a cupcake at halftime with a I love you, Yaya, from the owners in the Emirates, and certainly came to play, which has made a change for the Ivory Coast superstar this year, who's been desperately disappointing. But let's give Swansea a lot of credit, Stat. I thought they came to play. They've been in good form themselves, and they could probably count themselves a little unlucky to walk out of the Etihad without a point.
No, absolutely. I thought they gave a good account of themselves. Definitely could have gotten something out of this game. They had a couple of good chances late with Gomez off the bench, almost got an equalizer. And so, yeah, I mean, this is not a problematic result for Swansea at all. I think they're going to keep on rolling and playing well. But, yeah, for City, I mean, you mentioned Yaya Toure. You know, him and Fernandinho, that was the combination last season when they won the league, and I thought they worked well together. They would alternate, one going forward, the other staying back. But then Pellegrini went out and signed Fernando this summer. He wanted a more out-and-out defensive player there to give Yaya Toure the freedom to go up all the time. And it was kind of nice to see those two, Fernandinho and Yaya Toure, get a chance to play together again and them combine on the winning goal. So I hope Pellegrini is a little more flexible on that and gives Fernandinho a few more chances in there. But yeah, I mean, City to me just still don't look right. And, you know, there's something off with that team this season, and I don't see them making any serious run at Chelsea.
Obviously, stepping away from the Premiership for a second, Nate, they've got Bayern Munich midweek. Any chance that City gets something out of that? I mean, I look at this Bayern game as really the defining moment for their season, because if they do get something out of the game, which will keep their very slim hopes of qualification alive, it could be the catalyst to kickstart their season.
I suppose. I mean, I love the first game that they played in the Champions League this year, and actually one of the ones, I believe it was against Roma, where they were called, I love this terminology, tactically disrespectful to the competition that is the UEFA Champions League and going against Europe's elite. And they were handed a real, real nasty group. I mean, we're talking so much about the cakewalk that Liverpool was given and how they've completely cocked that one up. I mean, Man City were given the gauntlet of Champions League football that you can get as far as a group stage goes. And I think at best they scrape a draw against Munich. If I had to actually give a prediction, I think Munich's gonna win the match and run them off the pitch. Maybe they scrape a draw. But to go back to this game against Swansea, this, in my opinion, of the nine that were played over the last 2 days, was the most entertaining match as far as that combination of gritty English football and a bit of flair out there. And I go back to what I talked about on the previous show with Yaya Toure, that's who he is on his day. He is the microcosm of the combination of grit and flair. And when he is on his day, and he plays like the true Yaya Toure, whether he got his cupcake at halftime or he got to blow out the birthday candles before the match, whatever it is that got him in the right mood, I mean, the team runs through him. He is more than, I think, any other player in English football right now. He is the epitome of the guy that needs to have the squad run through him. So if they are to get anything or even maybe pull off the ultimate miracle and beat Bayern Munich in the Champions League and jumpstart their season, it's going to be spotlight on Yaya Toure.
Yes, thank you.
Nick, can I jump in there? Because Nate said a couple things that need correcting. Yaya Toure is suspended. He got sent off match day 4 against
CSK. Well, you set me up for that, Nick, and then Statman just came in like a hitman, and I just got mafioso, and I'm sleeping with the fishes now. Thanks, bud.
However, good news for Man City is Bayern have already clinched not only a knockout stage berth, but also first place in their group. So there's talk that they might field a less than full strength side, so that would help City out a bit. But even with that, I still think Bayern go in there and get a result. So I think City are not long for the Champions League this season.
The way Statman sharpened the scissors and then just cut your nuts off. Let's quickly talk about Gary Monk, Bertie. He says this is a hard place to come, and that's the closest we've been to a result in his time. Considering we were relegation favourites at the start of the season, we're not doing so bad. We had to do some last-ditch defending in the second half when City got going, but we had our chances of our own at the end. We could have taken a point. What do you make of the job that this man has done? Because he's certainly one of the more unheralded managers in this dashing darling Premier League.
Yeah, he seems to be doing all of the right things right now. You know, I mean, because when you look at the way Tim Sherwood was handling his tenure at Spurs, Sherwood was saying all the wrong things at the wrong time to the wrong people. Monk seems to be, he seems to be enjoying his time there. He's playing the same style of football, but he's also getting away with some of the things that Sherwood didn't get away with. I mean, he's got feisty on a number of occasions, but he is very respectful about this game and this result, even though they lost. It bodes really well when your team is playing well, you're creating chances, you're going all the way down the end. Shelby nearly got that free kick that deflected and, you know, nearly went in. And maybe that would have been a little lucky if they'd got the point there. But nonetheless, they are playing Man City. And Man City are a really good team. Statman says they're maybe a little out of sorts right now. But this is a team, unlike Chelsea. Chelsea haven't lost a game yet. Chelsea will lose games over the next couple of months. It's impossible for them to
put down a glass of wine right now and stick to water, please.
No, seriously. I believe that Man City are only 8 points away, okay? Chelsea are going to drop some points. If Man City are still playing so-so and people aren't so happy about it, just wait till they start firing. And you wait till Chelsea start, you know, falling down a bit. It will happen.
Okay, I want to know who's giving us the interference right now. Who's doing interference? I mean, I'm hearing some crackling. It's either Robin's brain exploding or Statman has a couple of nuggets he wants to share. Oh, no, it's gone away. So someone was doing something. All right, Leicester against Sunderland. The prediction crew, Statman had a score draw. Nate had a 2-1 win for Sunderland. Don't know what Bertie had because I couldn't be bothered to wait around and see what he said. But Nick Webster, at Nick Webster, the host of World Soccer Talk podcast.
That wanker.
Hashtag WST pod. Nick predicted a 0-0 draw. So because of that comment, Nate Aburea, let's talk about... No, we will go.
No, I had the scoreline correct,
No, you didn't. No, you didn't.
No, I didn't. No, that was Burnley. Yeah. That was the Burnley match. All right. I had the scoreline.
Don't jump ahead. Now. We'll go to the stat man because a nice one here. Leicester City have now played 5 consecutive games without scoring a goal. But I want to know from Statman, and I don't know if you're going to have it to hand, and whether you're going to do your little sleight of magic where somehow you dazzle us with some BS while you're searching on Google and then all of a sudden come up with the answer in the train of conversation. What is the longest drought of goal scoring in the Premiership?
Oh, consecutive matches without scoring by a team?
Yeah.
Well, let me think.
Take a nice deep breath here, and you might be able to hear the keyboard clicking in the background. But, yeah.
That's the King
Power Stadium.
that's clearly a Google situation, so I'll get back to you on that. But no, I mean, as far as this match, I mean, my Algerian Mahrez finally got back into the lineup, and I thought they played better with him in there, but still wasn't enough. Just 2 points in their last 7 matches since that famous win over Man United, which now seems a distant memory. And not a bad result for Sunderland on the road, so they keep moving away from the drop zone, which is good.
The Algerian!
I'm interested in this little Algerian man crush that Stat seems to have on any Algerian. Is there any particular reason for this?
No, I mean, obviously impressed by what I saw at the World Cup, and obviously in following these European leagues this season, I've just noticed a lot of good Algerian players at big clubs. I mean, there's a guy, Yassine Brahimi, who has 4 goals in the Champions League this season, had a hat-trick against Bate Borisov match day one. There's a fella at Sporting Lisbon, Islam Slimani, who I like a lot. So Hamburg. I'm telling you, 2018 World Cup final, Algeria-Iceland.
It's not called a crush. It's a ham-bone love affair with Algeria.
Ham-bone love affair. Well, the less said about this game, the better. You know, there was a couple of good highlights, but, you know, really, who cares? Stoke versus Burnley. This has to be the shocker of the weekend, being that all 4 of us, brilliant football minds, tactical geniuses, soothsayers, people with the ability to look at the tea leaves and dissect a result, got it all hopelessly wrong. Has Burnley picked up their 2nd consecutive victory at Stoke of all places? And I know that I'm probably guilty of waxing on lyrically about the atmosphere at the Britannia, and it's a very difficult place to play, and Stoke are always very good at home, and oh, we've been so impressed with Mark Hughes and the way they play football this year. Well, come on, Hughesy, let's get back to basics. Let's start lumping it up to Crouchy and getting a flick on, because whatever's happening at Stoke right now is not working, Nate Aburrea. It's not working.
No, it's not working. They lost to Burnley at home. I mean, what more needs to be said? But you go back to this table. I mean, Burnley has a chance to break out of the relegation fight, and no one gave them any sniff of a hope of that a month ago. The season is so young. Burnley could climb out. I even said it after a few matches, and you just shut me down and said, no way. I know they're still in 19th right now, but you know what? You know what else they are? Nick, you're going to love this.
I know.
Burnley.
9 points off the Champions League and only 8 points off a possible spot in the Europa League.
Oh, Burnley in the Europa League playing against Asteris Tripolis. Did I get that right, Stat?
That is correct. Yeah, the team Harry Kane scored a hat trick against and then let in a goal as the goalkeeper.
Oh, the Cyprus Giants, love it.
Greece.
Now,
that's so good. So there you were, polishing your knob, thinking how great you are, and you completely bone it. Hand bone. Bertie, when does Mark Hughes start feeling a little bit of the old whispering pressure? Because right now, only 2 wins in their last 5. They seem to be going in the wrong direction after starting the season very brightly.
They're only 4 points off a Champions League spot. They're fine. No, the thing about the game on Saturday was that it was poor defending. It was poor defending early on in the game. Ings does exactly what he does, and what he did in the Championship was he scores these perfectly poached goals. And he absolutely decimated the Stoke defence in the space of 2 minutes, scoring 2 goals. And that was the game right there. I mean, Walters with a great header near the end of the game. But by then, they were just sort of trying to do catch-up the whole time. But, you know, I mean, these games happen. I mean, it is a miracle. Every one of us predicted it was going to be 3-0, 4-0, 2-0, and 1-0, you know, by yourself, Nick. So I'm really shocked. But this is why we love the Premier League. This is why Burnley has a chance of going to Stoke and getting 3 points. So you've got to love that.
I've got to love the fact that you said the game was over in 2 minutes. Kind of like your love life, huh?
Hambone.
Chelsea, West Bromwich, Albion. Now, this one I'm going to have to give to the stat man, because not only did he do the correct scoreline, and you did as well, Nate, but stat man.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. Appreciate
stat it. Man, both goal scorers. Now, that to me is really impressive. And obviously, once again, a very impressive victory for Chelsea. I predicted a 4-0 thumping, and after the lad got himself sent off, I can't believe it wasn't. So I'll go to the stat man, because Chelsea, 11 against 10, at home, already 2-0 up. Why didn't they put the baggies to the complete and utter sword? As Mourinho said, we are playing well, fantastically well. We're getting results. But at the end of the season, if you don't manage to get some silverware, then it's frustration. It should have been 4-0 at halftime. It was 2-0. Quickly, you're negative. There's always negatives. And this is what I love about Mourinho. If you dig, if you've tried to find it, you'll always find it.
No, but it's interesting. They've been doing that all season. Even going back to their very first game against Burnley, a match they won 3-1. They should have won that game 6-1. That's sort of a Mourinho trademark of sort of taking the foot off the gas, doing just enough to win, and then moving on to the next match. And, you know, it's interesting. They have their toughest Champions League match of the group stage coming up away to Schalke. So I thought if there was ever a week where he was going to maybe put out less than his full strength lineup in the Premier League, maybe rest a few of these guys for the trip to Germany, this might have been it. But no, he put out what I think is his best lineup with, you know, Fabregas, Matic, Willian, Oscar, Hazard, and Costa. I've been saying all season, to me, that's Chelsea's strongest lineup from the midfield up. And so, yeah, he's really all about putting the Premier League to bed as quickly as possible. And you know, he might even rest one or two guys midweek against Schalke. So, I mean, his priority right now, interestingly enough, is the Premier League. And he thinks he can probably still win this group regardless. And so, you know, so far it's paying off for him. I mean, they just need a point to qualify and a win and against Schalke. And they'll clinch first in the group as well. So you know, we'll see how it works out for him. But, yeah, I thought the first half they were absolutely brilliant. Oscar was terrific. A beautiful pass to Costa on the first goal. Maybe a hint of offsides there, but I don't think so. I think he was okay. And yeah, I mean, Chelsea just keep on rolling. Have not lost a game yet this season in any competition.
Stat, we have a tweet that was directed at you, at Statman Mossy. Chelsea will be among the front runners for Gareth Bale's signature.
Ooh.
And that's from Gary Edwards, the Wiz, at Wiz SPGAS. IA. What are your thoughts on Gareth Bale to Chelsea?
I don't see it. You know, the interesting dynamic there with Bale, because he was out, he missed a few games, and Real Madrid played very well without him, and their game actually flowed a little bit better without him. They were more balanced. Isco came into the side and really has been in great form. But nevertheless, I mean, Gareth Bale, the guy scored the two most important goals of their season last year, the winners in the Copa del Rey final and the Champions League final. And they've also put up great results with him in the lineup this season, and his numbers are great. So I don't think that it's as big an issue as some people are making him out. Some people in England are hoping it is, so that they might be able to capitalize. But I think Bale's very happy there, very settled, and everybody is generally happy with him. So I don't see them spending that kind of money on a player and then, you know, after a couple seasons unloading him. I don't see that happening at all.
Bertie, let's keep it on Mourinho. He got himself into a bit of bother with Sergio Ramos, who was a little peeved that Diego Costa was declared unfit. And Mourinho's response to Ramos Classic, and obviously having managed Ramos, I know Sergio Ramos is a fantastic football player, but he is not a doctor. My doctor and the doctor of the Spanish national team, they had the scans and they decided that the player was not in the condition to play. I am nobody to go against it. And I don't think Sergio did a medicine's master in the last couple of years to understand about it.
God, he is good.
He's good, isn't he?
So what's the question?
The question was, Mourinho.
Yeah.
Why does he do it? Why does he constantly... why does he get his finger out? And it's like me calling you fatty. Hey, fatty.
Because
fatty.
He loves to wind people
because
up.
Because I'm thinking, like Mourinho's already thinking ahead to when they play Real Madrid in the Champions League, isn't he?
Of course. He's a clever man. He plays these silly little mind games. You know, I mean, we could go on about it forever, but I mean, I don't think I've ever seen him smile. And that's the best part about it. He delivers all of this and then he probably just goes home and just sort of roars with laughter on the couch because everybody's buying into his just complete bullshit. You know, I mean,
whoa.
Family show.
You can't say that on Fox, okay? The World Soccer Talk pods. All right, come on. Don't worry about it, Stat. You're good.
I was just getting going there. No, but this is Mourinho. These are the games that he plays, and this is what makes him such a successful manager. And this is what will give him at least one trophy this year, possibly two. But, you know, that's his shtick. He loves to do this.
For those of you wishing to complain about the foul and abusive language by Robin Burt at World Soccer Talk, hashtag WSTPOD, hashtag potty mouth.
You know, if the former Brazilian legend Socrates had gotten into it with Mourinho and Mourinho had used that line, Socrates could have pointed out, actually, I am a doctor, so.
That would have been perfect.
Damn, Stat is even better than Mourinho. You talk about a battle of wit, my God.
Socrates, the man who bragged that he smoked 20 ciggies a day, right?
That's
20
right.
Cigarettes.
That's right.
And was still absolutely brilliant. Talking of brilliant, the hottest team in all of football right now. That's right. You wouldn't have said it a few months ago, maybe even 6 weeks ago. But Newcastle United, can anybody stop the Toonami? Because right now, this is a team playing with the most important component in all of football, namely belief and confidence. And you know, this one was a tough one in many respects for Mr. Taylor. It was an absolute gutter to see him leave the field after, I believe it was 32 months out, and we're talking about Ryan Taylor right here. But the reaction of the Newcastle players when they scored the goal to beat Queen's Park Rangers to go over and celebrate with Taylor was quite magnificent. This team right now, though, I mean, it almost defies belief, and nobody really knows what to say. With 51,915 crazed Geordies roaring them on, Newcastle United have won 5 in a row. They're now up to 5th place, and Pardew was dead man walking 6 weeks ago. Nate Aburea, how on earth has this man pulled it off, and can Newcastle continue this complete and utter fairy tale? And when you look at some of the fixtures coming up for them, you'd say maybe.
I'd say yes, they can. I think this is also a fine example of why owners in the Premier League should maybe lessen up on that trigger finger when it comes to managers of their football clubs that they own. I mean, that goes for so many different teams in this league right now, namely my own, where who knows what could happen at any club, because you talk about a dead man walking. I mean, Pardew was the laughing stock of English football about 6 weeks ago. I mean, and this 5-game streak, I love what it's been, because and also not to forget about that League Cup victory at Man City, where Man City actually put out a pretty top-notch squad, and they went into the Etihad and won 2-0. I mean, I know it's just the League Cup, but I think that was actually, so in the grand scheme of things, it's actually been a 6-game run, 5 in the Prem. But the ones in the Prem, I talked about this during the preview show, 4 of them have been by one goal, and they're just winners right now. They've got luck on their side. They've got belief on their side, and I think they are a fine example, again, going back to the parity of the Premier League this year, that anybody can beat anybody, and they're beating everybody by one goal. They're just scraping by, and what do you know, level with Man United, 19, fifth place. Love it.
QPR, Bertie, obviously still struggling. If Charlie Austin doesn't score, they don't score. I mean, is this the season that sees QPR go back down to the Championship after just a very brief flirtation with the big boys?
Or the conference?
It's starting to look like it, isn't it? I mean, they are now completely rock bottom. I mean, the thing about Queen's Park Rangers is that they've been in the games, in the last 4 or 5 games, they've actually been in each of those games. But the one thing they're missing is that killer instinct. You know, I mean, there's only so much that Austin can do, or Zamora, or, you know, any of their midfield folks, but they just don't have that killer instinct. And a team like Newcastle that's flying right now, you know, you can't really compete with them. I mean, the amazing thing, and just talking about Newcastle here for 1 second, is that they've conceded 1 goal in 5 games. So the one thing that they're doing incredibly well, obviously they're not scoring many, but as long as you're not giving up goals, then you're always going to be in there. And, you know, and Sissoko, I mean, the guy's a madman. You know, he's coming to their rescue time and time again. But the beautiful thing about this is that, you know, fans are so fickle. 5 weeks ago, everybody was saying, oh, you know, the Cockneys that are running our club, blah, blah, blah. They don't know what they're doing. And then suddenly the guy's a genius. So it sort of reeks at the head here. I mean, it's Queen's Park Rangers, they are truly done.
Well, the best part about the mad Toonami is, you know, 6 weeks ago, they were like, relegation. That's all they could talk about. Now they're talking about bloody Champions League.
It's funny. It's funny. It's
separated by 9 points, ain't it?
Yeah.
Stat, we'll go to you. What is the run of consecutive victories in the Barclays Premier League? Do you know?
The longest run of victories?
Yeah.
Oh, when he repeats the question, you know he doesn't have it.
You're not nice. You're not nice.
I know. Well, coming up for Newcastle, they've got a couple of softies before they play some of the bigger boys. And talking of the bigger boys, Tottenham Hotspur. Now, we're not going to call them big boys, but we're going to call them very, very, very lucky boys after stealing one against Hull City, who in the first half I thought were quite brilliant. Then they got completely screwed over by one of the most outrageous sending offs I've seen this season. Yes, Ramirez was petulant. No, he wasn't violent. As soon as they went down to 10 players, Tottenham, who'd previously looked like a team that had never actually met one another, started playing, and they get the late dramatic winner from Christian Eriksen's stat. I mean, this is two wins in their last three games that have come by the skin, the very skin of their teeth.
Yeah, and second time here recently they've benefited from a dubious sending off. If you remember against Aston Villa, that Benteke Ryan Mason episode that got you so all worked up that week, I remember. So yeah, they were very fortunate here. They were getting completely outplayed. The red card completely changed this game. But they get the result. They move forward, and now they turn their attention to Europa League again. But no, yeah, I mean, I felt bad for Hull City because that's a team that was in desperate need of a win, and they were well on their way, and then obviously that one incident changed the game.
I'm getting a very rude message from Nate Aberair saying, called it! Well, okay, you did call it, and actually I did forget to give the results of the Newcastle QPR game. Called it! Nick, 1-0. Statman went with the Newcastle win but didn't have the balls to say who would win it. Nate said 2-1. Bertie was... Well, he was tucking into his Chardonnay, so we didn't get a result from him. But Spurs, once again, finding a way to win. Now, that's got a stick in the craw, hasn't it, Robin Burt?
This was a great
win. What does your brother say about Tottenham Hotspur? Because you can let the listeners know, he is, in fact, a season ticket holder at White Hart Lane for many, many years, right?
Yeah, and he takes his daughters to the game, and they love going, and, you know, but the funny thing is...
Very tasty daughters,
naughty,
by the way.
Naughty. The one thing about he and I is that we actually like each other's teams, but, of course, Spurs and West Ham fans hate their, you know, respective teams, so... The funny thing about this game was that you're right. Hull dominated the first half. Then you had the Ramirez red card, and then for the next 20 minutes, no, sorry, maybe the next 10 minutes, they made a few changes, and one of those changes was bringing Lennon on to give them a little bit of width on the right hand side. And the other thing is Kane, he's having a fantastic time of it. You know, just very recently, but he may not be a technically good player, but he's finding himself in the right spots with the free kick that Eriksen took, came off the post, Kane was there to just tuck it in, but he was also creating space and movement for Spurs alongside, you know, Dembele, who I thought had a great game.
I think it's Eriksen... known as a purple patch.
Yes, sir. But, yeah, I mean, this was a point. This was a game that Spurs had to win just as much as Hull had to win this game. So the fact that Spurs went up there and did them over, it took real patience to play against, 10 players. Because all Hull did was, of course, they just sat behind the ball and Spurs had to find a way to get through it. And they did it through Lennon, they did it through Kane, and they did it through Eriksen.
You talk about bringing width into a game, bringing speed into a game. All we are saying is give pace a chance. When you bring Lennon on, you got to love it. And this was eerily similar.
Oh, that was just brutal.
Come on. That was the 06 World Cup chant.
45 minutes to say that as well.
I've actually been waiting 8 years to say that since the 2006 World Cup, as a matter of fact. But no, this was eerily similar. I mean, a carbon copy of the Villa match that the stat man brought up. I mean, like, eerily similar. Down 1-0, a red card off the ball that allows him to come back in the match, and then Eriksen with the winner in the 89th minute. I mean, it's really, like, almost – spooky how similar it was to that Villa game. And again, I go back to think lucky, have belief, have confidence. I mean, see the reaction of Pochettino on the sideline when they score that winner. They're a different side on the road. They actually have reason to have belief on the road. They have with the small away section, and as you guys know, as people who grew up over there in England, that traveling support is commonly a far more belief-filled group, and there to just fully cheer on their squad, their club. And I swear to God, they have more belief from their fans on the road than they do at home. The players are more comfortable on the road. Pochettino feels like he's maybe away from all the boos and whistling when he's on the road, because wherever, whatever stadium he's playing at, those fans are focused on their own team and not him and what he's doing on the sideline. I mean, they actually can think lucky and have belief on the road. And so when you see these results line up in that Villa match and then this whole match, how they are almost identical, it cracks me up, because I again think Tottenham are a far better squad on the road with a far better chance to actually get anything done than they are at White Hart Lane. And that is such a reflection of the atmosphere, that toxic atmosphere there at the Lane. Their next away match, though, as you alluded to in the preview show, Nick, is away to Chelsea. And I'm going to withhold my prediction for that game until a few days.
Hull City only one win in their last 11. But there's something very cuddly about Steve Bruce, that man. Just the way he's so thoughtful in his post-match interviews. I mean, here's a man who really seems to think about his responses and care deeply about football.
Absolutely. And, you know, it shows you how things change. A few weeks ago, we were talking about him possibly taking over at Newcastle for Alan Pardew. It's been a bizarre season for Hull, because they've had their moments. I mean, they had back-to-back games where they got a point at Anfield, a point at the Emirates. But they haven't been able to build on that at all. And they've lost out their last three. They're having trouble scoring goals. And, yeah, I mean, he's a good manager, and maybe he can get him out of it. You know, they face Manchester United next at Old Trafford, so that'll be interesting. But I'm a fan of Steve Bruce, but no, I mean, he's got his work cut out for him with this team, because they are struggling.
In fairness, getting a point at the Emirates and a point at Anfield, that's 2 points against 8th and 12th place, just throwing that out there. But yeah.
Thank you for that one, Mr. Aburrea. Let's saving the best for last. The Cockney Red here behind the mic. Yes, that's me, the Cockney Red. Manchester United, oh, my favourite team. Well, Bertie, Nate, Statman and myself, we all had Arsenal winning, so what the hell do we know as Manchester United go into the Emirates? And I wish we could say they heaped pressure on Arsene Wenger, as now Arsenal are enjoying their worst start to a top-flight season, I think it's 32 years, could be longer than that. The Wenger out crowd is beginning to find its voice again at the Emirates, but I mean, that's going to do absolutely nothing, because somehow Arsene Wenger has some compromising pictures of the Arsenal board with a Mexican donkey on a steamy night in Mexico City. He's seemingly completely unfireable. United did not play particularly well. Arsenal certainly had their chances. Jack Wilshere with perhaps the best of the bunch. And I thought, for me, the most entertaining moment of the game was when he went, head to chest with Fellaini. That was a little embarrassing for Mr. Wilshere. He looked like he was trying to headbutt Fellaini, but is just completely way too short. Wenger talks about naive defending. But what do we make about this Arsenal team and Arsene Wenger? I mean, is he completely untouchable, Statman?
Well, first of all, Nick, I predicted a 1-1 draw in this match, if you want to go back and listen to the audio.
You're still wrong. You're still wrong, mate.
Still wrong. And secondly, Nick, it's funny you should mention Arsenal. They actually hold the record for most consecutive Premier League wins at 14.
Boom! Oh, and so, Statman comes right back with a riposte.
One David Mossy. There's only one David Mossy.
Now, this match was more about Arsenal than United. United really didn't do that much. They just kind of hung in there, and then the 3 points sort of fell in their lap. I mean, I'll give them some credit with that makeshift back line that they were able to hold out as long as they did. But it does help those defenders when they're playing in front of, I'm going to make the statement right now, the second best goalkeeper in the world behind Manuel Neuer and David De Gea. But nevertheless, I mean, Arsenal had no business losing this game. I mean, it's unbelievable that the ability they have to screw up these big matches. And I think the Wilshere injury was a big factor. They were playing pretty well up to that point. But still, you know, and now Wenger's got a decision to make up front, because I know Welbeck can play out wide, but if he has to choose between Welbeck and Giroud, you know, Giroud does provide that cutting edge that they lack sometimes. He comes right back in, scores a goal, but he doesn't provide the same movement, the same sort of interchange play with Alexis Sanchez that Welbeck does. So that's going to be an interesting call for Wenger to make on days where he kind of has to choose one or the other between those two. But no, I mean, Arsenal, they have all sorts of problems. You're right, worst start since 1982. And yeah, I mean, it's Wenger once again is getting a lot of criticism.
Nate Aburea, let's talk about England's greatest ever player, a certain Wayne Rooney, in a very rich vein of form as well, scoring for England, scoring for United, always seems to score against Arsenal. We were very critical of Rooney after he got that ludicrous red card a few weeks ago and were questioning his ability to be the captain of Manchester United. Has he turned it around?
Well, I actually recall that podcast, my response to the question of him blowing up. I said, maybe it'll actually do some good for Man United to see that their captain still has a spine and still has a passion, albeit a psychotic passion for kicking people off the ball. Well, I'm not going to say that that was the cause and effect, but since then, they've begun climbing the table. I love the stat about Arsenal real quick. You know, worst start since, what was it, 1982 for the Gunners? I mean, Man United with their worst start in 25 years, and they're in a Champions League spot. I mean, this league is wide open, and this match, I think more than any this weekend, was such a reflection of the league itself. And I actually listened to this match on the Talk Sport radio, as a matter of fact. We always give so much love to NBC Sports, where we have to watch our English footy here in America. I was on the Interstate 5 cruising from Reading to Berkeley on Saturday morning, so I actually listened to this match in its entirety, and just exceptional commentary from the Talk Sport crew. And Man United had no business even sniffing a tie in this match. I mean, Arsenal blew so many chances, and credit to Wayne Rooney. I mean, the second goal was just absolutely outstanding. I have seen the video of it since I heard the play-by-play commentary, but that was just Arsenal getting and Wilshere being sucked up way too high on the play and leaving poor, what was it, Monreal back there trying to defend Di Maria and Rooney on a 2v1. And so credit to England's greatest footballer of all time, Mr. 100 Cap, Mr. Arsenal Slayer, Wayne Rooney. I remember when he was 16 years old back in 2004 and that goal that he scored for Everton, that just amazing goal up and over David Seaman. And ever since then, what is it, Statman, 13 goals against Arsenal in his career. That's just outstanding. That is the definition of a man who has a ferocious eye for a single opponent more than any other. And so, you know, credit to Rooney, Man United with the epitome of a smash-and-grab victory. But they had no business doing this. Arsenal blew this game. Man United didn't win it. I mean, it's just this was – I can't believe how many chances they blew. They had every chance to get something out of this game. They didn't. Not only do they sometimes lack a spine, sometimes when those strikers are off on their day, they don't have anything up front either. It was atrocious.
Bertie, possession stat. Manchester United 40% to Arsenal 60%. Is it a case once again of Arsenal trying to walk the ball into the back of the net?
Yeah, they should have had this game done and dusted in the first 20 minutes. It's funny. I mean, you know, Wilshere had that great opportunity just to just side foot it to the right of the keeper, and he hit it straight at him. You know, Arsenal are funny because they had plenty of chances. Oxlade-Chamberlain on the right hand side, he was dominating them in the first half, but it did change when Stat said that when Wilshere went off and the same for Szczesny as well, when he collided with Gibbs and gave up that comical own goal with Gibbs lying on the floor, and you know, Valencia was basically passing the ball across the goal, came off Gibbs's foot, and it was in the goal. Man United only had two shots on goal in that entire game. So the problem with Arsenal, and it goes back to the beginning of the season when we talked about it, they're, you know, so they're top heavy. Arsenal are top heavy. Too many creative players, lots of good players who know how to put the ball in the back of the net. But the one thing they have a problem with is defending. And a game like that, Arsenal, again, should have had it done and dusted in the first 20 minutes. If it wasn't for, you know, the likes of Carrick and Fellaini, who were the foundation, believe it or not, Fellaini, the foundation for Man United in that game.
Yes.
And, you know, Fellaini's pass was sublime to Di Maria, who then played the ball to Rooney. I mean, that move, I've watched it, you know, about three or four times. It's beautiful, beautiful by Fellaini. I mean, he had a fantastic game. And as for the greatest English player of all time, it's not Wayne Rooney. It's more like Stanley Matthews.
God,
way to dig into. Can you tell the kids about Stanley Matthews?
I mean,
please.
Dust the bloody cobwebs off with
that. Good Lord.
The first ever Ballon d'Or winner.
Well done. See, how do you do this, Stat? My goodness.
That's why he's the Stat Man.
Telling you.
Gentlemen, let's put a bow on this weekend. Give me your thoughts. Wrap it all up, David Mossy.
Wayne Rooney wasn't the only England player to reach 100 caps recently. Karen Carney for the women's team today. Great honor for her, so I'll end on that note.
Nate Aburaya. I mean, obviously, not the greatest weekend for you as you relived Istanbul. There, I said it.
Well done. I actually got to end this show on a couple of shout-outs. First off, to a very close friend of mine who lives in Chico, California, right down the road from Reading. His name is Tyler Chu. And about 2 years ago, it was a late Sierra Nevada Pale Ale influence night where Tyler Chu said, "I'm finally picking a club. I've liked English soccer for 10 years. And you know who I like? Crystal Palace." And ever since then, he has been my favorite Crystal Palace supporter. And I tried to stay away from the result because I was up till about 4 in the morning in Berkeley last night. And I woke up to a text message from Tyler Chu in Chico, California, saying, "Crystal effing Palace, the thorn in your nutsack." So thank you to you, Tyler Chu. Congratulations on your newfound love for Crystal Palace. And also thank you to the folks down on Tightwad Hill at Memorial Stadium in Berkeley for showing me the hospitality during the Cal-Stanford football game where I spent the Saturday afternoon up there. Anybody out there? Bernie's already talked about Formula One, so I can get away with this real quick. Anybody out there, put Tightwad Hill at Cal Berkeley football on your sporting bucket list. Go watch the game for free. Sip beers with the real fans on a hill above the stadium. It doesn't get any better.
Well, if it's free, Bertie will be there immediately. So get your nose out of the Chardonnay.
Well, it has to be Burnley for showing that, you know, you can still be a shit team and, you know, once in a while, you know, get those, those away wins. But Newcastle for keeping that run going. And maybe Pardew for manager of the month. That's bloody funny right there.
My takeaway is that Chelsea will probably have this Premier League title wrapped up around the first week of February. But I believe that the race for Champions League is going to be very, very interesting. And as we like to say, Arsenal, Tottenham and Liverpool, just a couple of victories off that Champions League spot. So, yes, they are completely crap, but no, they are not completely out of it. Just one more reminder, draft11.com. Make sure you sign up by this November 29th. You can play myself, the gaffer, Karashnaya. It's free to enter. Go to draft11.com. Go to World Soccer Talk League. That's the game. That's the freebie. And you can win a cash money. And as always, you can subscribe to this show via Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes. And don't forget, we love your tweets. At World Soccer Talk, hashtag WSTPod. For the Stat Man, David Mossy, for Nate Aburaya, and for the Fat Man, Robin Burt, I am Nick Webster. We'll see you all next week. Bye for now.
Count on your irons.